Welcome to the July 10th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz? Fish? Hales?
Here. Okay, we have some communications items up front. Take those, please.
Item 672, request of Tawny Stewart to address council regarding R2D2 on homeless issues.
Good morning. Come on up. Hi. Welcome.
Yeah, me and my husband.
Just put your name into the record, Tawny.
Tawny Stewart.
Yeah, thanks.
Me and my husband started staying there a couple months ago, and is a couple, and it's been really good there because if we.
Can you pull the microphone a little closer?
A little trouble hearing you.
Okay.
There you go. That's good. Sorry.
And it's been good because we've been able to stay there together and we weren't split up. And it's helped us also. We were out on the streets and we had an addiction that we were into. And since we've been there, we've been able to be clean too. Since then, it's helped us with that.
Good. Good. Well, thanks for being here today. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for coming. I think there's some other folks here as well. Thank you, Tawny. Thanks. 673 then.
Request of Dwayne Stewart to address council regarding homeless issues.
Good morning.
Morning. Sorry, I'm a little tired this morning.
Okay.
Comfy. All right, just got to set this up real quick. That's all right.
It's fine. That's fine.
All right. Hello. My name is Dwayne Stewart, and I'm houseless. I became a member of Right to Dream 2 in March. And since then, I've learned a lot about concerning the homeless population of Portland. The first being this: sleep is a biological need that cannot and will not be denied forever. According to the point in time count of homelessness done in Multnomah County, there are 2,869 people who meet the definition of literally homeless. Literal homelessness is defined by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development as any person sleeping in an emergency shelter, sleeping in a motel provided by a voucher, or without shelter. Of this number of people, 1,895 are not receiving shelter. To make this a clearer picture, that's 66% of the homeless population, living, breathing people who have need for sleep, huddling under whatever shelter they can to stay out of the rain, or trekking to an inconvenient location to keep from getting woken up by police officers. Some of these locations make it difficult to come back into the city to look for work, go to school, or even just to receive services for food and showers. My last point aside, sleep is obviously a very important thing for the human body. A study performed by the San Diego-based University of California in 2002 showed that sleep deprivation can cause slurring of speech, loss of coordination and manual dexterity, loss of cognitive function, delayed or interrupted perceptive ability, and in cases of prolonged or repeated sleep deprivation, mania and hallucinations. If this list of symptoms sounds like reasons police confront a person for suspicion of drug use, that's because it is. In many cases, a police officer will wake up a homeless person, tell them to move on, and that person will begin their day without going back to sleep. Many times, this means a person is getting less than 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, and in some cases, less than 2 or 3. And then, when those people who are denied rest by the police begin to exhibit these symptoms that I stated before, they stand less of a chance to get a job, be able to pay attention in school, or even function in the general society. They even stand a chance of going to jail because of mental and physical symptoms caused by a lack of sleep. As I stated before, sleep is a biological imperative. It's going to happen whether it's legal or not, and I personally would rather see a person sleep safe and away from traffic than to see him pass out while crossing a street. I would also rather see a person sleeping at Right to Dream 2 instead of out on the sidewalks where they stand a chance of being entered into the vicious cycle I previously mentioned. Right to Dream 2 and by direct action, Right to Survive and by direct action, Right to Dream 2 are filling a role that is sorely needed in downtown Portland. The need for a grassroots organization catering to homeless people, run by the homeless, formerly homeless, and their allies to keep people off the streets, teach them their rights, and extend a warm, welcoming hand that says, yeah, you might not have a home, you might be in a really bad spot right now, and you may think you have nothing, but guess what? We're here for you. It's not going to be easy. But let us help you. Come in, sleep for 12 hours, and have some food, and go about your day, and at the end of it, come back. We'll welcome you with open arms. I would just like to see the fines go away from our organization so that we can continue doing this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Thank you. Carla, next one, please.
674, request of Bosco to address council regarding R2, D2, and homeless issues.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, my name is Bosco, and I was born in Dallas. I came from Anchorage, Alaska. When I came here, we had a tavern, and we lost it all. I ended up downtown. I'm not proud of it, but it's life. But I've been downtown for 25, 26 years. I've seen a lot of people come, die, go to the penitentiary, and just other things. I always ask God, why am I here, you know? Today, I could see that I am here because he wanted me to be a part of something that is just amazing. Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive have done a lot for me. Not only that, but Mr. Abraham, I know him from the streets from years and years ago. This man gave me a chance to be a part of something that I can say that I'm very proud of and love today. At Right to Dream 2, I was homeless in Vegas, and it was just wow, you know, just tense. But now to be a part of an organization where people come, get their proper sleep, get housing, get jobs. Mr. Abraham got it set up to where you can go to a TV show, a radio show, just things that, you know, I would never think that I would be a part of, and I'm proud to say today, I'm a little nervous, I'm proud to say today that I'm proud to be a part of Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive. And if I had one wish today, knowing this, Mr. Mayor, I would love for you and Mr. Abraham to sit down and have a lunch. And I would pay for that lunch because he is a very intelligent man. And I think that you guys would really enjoy talking to Mr. Abraham. And that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Right. Thank you.
Item 675, request of Dish Weed to address council to support R2D2. Sorry about that pronunciation.
Morning.
Good morning. I apologize. My name is Brian Castor. It was my street name. She was actually saying that. For 6 months, I have been at R2D2. Life's funny. Sometimes we're walking down the street and we become homeless. I am one of those people. It was completely accidental. I didn't even want to be in Portland. I was trying to go to Seattle. But I got off a train and found $60 in my pocket and everything I own on my back and homeless. 6 months ago, I found R2D2. R2D2 is more than a place. It's an ideal. It's a place of justice. It's a place where human beings, I don't care about the state of their housing, humans just reach out to each other and pull each other in. We give comfort to so many people who have no voice, who have no say, who are ignored, who are invisible every day of the year. And I get to sit in front of you guys and have a voice. God bless. my voice. Your fines are crippling, and they are unjust. The spirit of the law, the protection of the innocent, fails at your fine. We protect the innocent. I know where I stand. I will stand before my Creator, proud. They have to end. We aren't the solution, but we are certainly not the problem. And we are doing the best we can with what we have, and it is little, and we ask for no more, not from you, not from the federal government. We manage on our own, and we're okay. We're trying to make a positive difference downtown, changing the way people feel and think. We're teaching people to think. You can't buy that, and I don't want your money. You don't have to buy us. I just want the opportunity to continue to teach, to love people, to bring them in. Please stand with us, not on the other side of our fence. Come inside. Join us. We will welcome you. We welcome everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Request of Christopher Lee Meisner to address council regarding right to dream 2.
Good morning.
Good morning, council. Thank you for the opportunity to hear my voice.
All right. Hello, I'm Chris Meisner, and I've been part of Right to Dream 2 now for about 6 months. I've witnessed numerous good things, such as people getting back on their feet by finding work and housing, people going back to school, people getting housed, flat out just getting housed. So in my opinion, Right to Dream 2 is a much-needed platform for the houseless to use as a transitional place to help get back to where they once were. And it's very needed here in Portland, Oregon. There's numerous of houseless that prefer to stay at Right to Dream 2 versus the missions. And I don't know, their politics might lie in other areas, but, I mean, we welcome everybody. We don't hold anything over anybody's head. You know, we accept you for who you are. And what I really don't understand is why the city wants to fine us and continue to hinder such a good thing as Right to Dream 2. We're all human beings. Why can't we help each other instead of kicking people when they're down? Both in the financial sense and being out on the street before I came to Right to Dream 2, I've witnessed police officers actually literally, you know, kick people awake. I don't understand the concept in that. Before I came to Right to Dream 2, as someone who stayed overnight, I was way more tired and wore out from walking around with close to 130 pounds on my back all day and half the night, not getting very much sleep, because you got to sleep with one eye open so you don't get your stuff stolen or get beat up when you're sleeping, whatever. Or get told that I couldn't stay there and be move along, you know, by a security officer or a police officer. And you can't, in that state, you can't look for a job and expect to be successful. So, and since I've came to Right to Dream 2, the people there have really given me a welcome sense of belonging. I became a rest area coordinator and got put in charge of the donation area and outreach, which is we take clothing, food out to people that don't come into town. And now, I really didn't know what to expect of that at first, but it's great right now. I wouldn't trade the warm feeling of helping someone who's on the streets for a nine to five right now, because a job or working may fill up your wallet, but I've yet to find a job that fills your heart like what I'm doing for the rest area. And that's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well said. Thank you all. All right. Let's move to the consent calendar. And I think we've had a request to take three items off the consent calendar, which is which are 680, 681, and 682.
And we've had an additional request for 677 and 679.
Okay.
And 78 too. This gentleman has.
Not yet. Hang on, not yet. We got to figure out which ones. So all 677, 678, and 679. So basically, the first six items are all pulled. Is that right, Carla?
Yes, I believe that's what he's. Yes, that's what he's requesting.
All right, then.
The same person has pulled them all.
No, Mr. Walsh has pulled a couple. 682 was Mr. Walsh.
Okay. All right, so then let's take a vote on the balance of the consent calendar.
Okay. So we've pulled 677, 678, 679, 680, 681, and 682.
Correct. Any others? All right, then let's take a roll call on the balance of the consent calendar.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. All right, and then we can probably go ahead and do the two regular items and then come back to that whole series as long as we're ready on 686. So. Okay. So let's take 686 and 687, and then we'll go back to the pulled items.
686, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide outpatient treatment and supportive housing to chronic offenders identified by the services coordination team.
Do we have a presentation on this morning? I don't think so. Yeah, here if there are any questions, and then probably a little bit more on 687. Any questions on this item from council? Anyone in the audience want to testify on 686? If not, it's an emergency ordinance. Let's take a roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, 687.
Authorize a contract with Bode Technology for touch DNA services for a total not to exceed amount of $350,000.
And this is a first reading of the ordinance. Again, we don't have a presentation planned. If council has any questions, we had Police Bureau staff here. Oh, there she is. Okay. All right. Any questions at this point? And anyone else signed up to testify on this item?
I did not have a sign-up sheet. Did you want to testify?
I didn't sign up, but I would like to make comment on 687.
Okay, come on up.
Hi, my name is Mike Morin. I've lived in Portland for about a year and a half now, and I'm currently using my frugally saved up funds to live in the Georgia Hotel. Just with regard to 686, it looks like I don't have any problem with that. That chronic offenders, the word offender is a little bit in question. But the thing on this DNA services, like 300, you know, to me, it falls in the long litany of like lie detectors and polygraph tests and DNA evidence and you get and even if the DNA evidence is real, like when I was on probation in Eugene, one of the things I had to come and get my DNA sample, so you know, in case of whatever, you know, but you know, you get into like. I remember, like, watching the O.J. Simpson miniseries, and they had the DNA and evidence, it seems a little bit silly and real easy to get false positives on it. Even like, you know, fingerprints is another one, you know. They say we all have unique fingerprints, but I don't know, you know, it's in a long list of, seems like watching too much TV and believing what you see on TV. That's all I want to say.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, this technology actually ought to help us quite a bit with things like murder investigations. So,
I don't agree. And $350,000. I mean, I'd like to sit down and talk to y'all with what I could do with, and I'm going to testify on some of these other ones.
Okay.
What we could do with that kind of money to address the crisis and longer term issues in the city.
Thanks very much. All right, if there's no one else to testify on that, then that passes to second reading. And then let's go back to the items that were pulled, 677.
Approve an intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University for the Hatfield Residential Fellows Program for training and leadership development for candidates interested in the public sector.
So someone wanted to testify on this item? Is that why it was pulled?
That gentleman who just left pulled it.
Okay. All right, is there anyone here to testify on 677? If not, let's take a roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Bishop?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, 678.
Authorize a contract for $210,000 with Coalfire Systems, Inc. for payment card industry data security standard compliance audit services.
Let the record show that this company actually has nothing to do with coal, but why they picked this name eludes me for a data management company. But good thing we weren't making a contract selection based on names.
It reminds me, Mayor, of a nonprofit we have in our community called Volunteers of America, and they get flooded every day with phone calls from people saying they want to volunteer. They are not a volunteer organization. Mm-hmm. They are the largest social service provider in the state.
Yeah, you got to watch that. So no coal will be burned as a result of this contract. Anyone wants to testify on this item? Roll call then, please. Oh, you did want to testify. Sorry, come on up.
Oh, there he is. Sorry, he's there. He's over there.
Come on up.
I wanted to testify on all three of these.
Oh, okay.
As far as the...
Sir, take a seat, please.
Take a seat and put your name back into the record.
Oh, I'm Mike Morin here again.
Thanks.
As far as the Portland State University, and I'm all for the use of higher education and all education to be coordinated in united mission, and as a transition approach, I think intergovernmental work cooperation is a good thing. I just wanted to call attention to the word public sector and how we differentiate between public center and public and private, where we all know that the private really, really dominates the public and uses the public for their best purposes, although they tend to create a lot of issues, which there's a thing called the Democratic Party, which tends to like be able to figure, hey, that's jobs for us, regulating the private sector, you know, and like we really got to get beyond that and all work together and sort of cut the Gordian knot of all the false issues and all the allocations of funds like that when we go right to the direct allocation of funds for individual needs and community betterment. Endeavors. Is Coalfire Systems like this one seems like is that like an audit to like do like energy management in municipal buildings? Is that what that's all about?
It's actually having to do with processing credit card transactions.
With regards to city
people pay for things like reserving a park with their credit cards.
Okay, so it's just like an auditing the credit cards and making sure everybody pays, and I don't want to touch that one. Now, the competitive bidding for the city fleet, now, is this because you're planning to buy new cars, or is this because you're downsizing the fleet?
Because we cycle cars through the fleet.
So you're buying new cars.
And then we auction.
Now, one of the things we really need to do in the next 20, 25 years, and this is why the port, I was so enthused when I first saw the 25-year porting plan, which since seems to have been gutted, that they were really on the right track. They really were.
Still in effect.
Okay. Well, the original, I went back later when I was living on Montgomery Street in downtown Value Inn, I went back and they gave me gave me the new version of the plan, and the really good things in the original 25-year plan were gone. But anyway, I would testify if you buy it on a loan, you get 3, 4, or 5 years to get equity in a vehicle, right?
You need to wrap up because you've used
Well, okay, up the I just I'm just saying like we really ought to be, you know, not like, I mean, this seems like a infusion to the automobile companies, you know, like Barack Obama's stimulus plan, you know.
Okay. I mean, it's not that, but thank you.
But that's what it seems like. We need to be considering like downsizing, and if you're downsizing the municipal fleet, then you want to get rid of the ones that you don't need anymore. But
exactly.
But if you're talking about bringing in new vehicles, that's wrong. That's I hate to be so blunt, but that's corrupt.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, so let's take a roll call on 678, unless there's anyone else that wants to testify on that one. Okay, roll call 678, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And 679, unless there's anyone else?
Authorized competitive bidding process for an auctioneering contract for city fleet to dispose of obsolete vehicles and equipment valued at $1 million per year.
Okay, roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. 680.
Accept and appropriate a grant in the amount of $518,240 from the Department of Homeland Security through its Federal Emergency Management Agency for the purchase of individual face pieces for firefighters' self-contained breathing apparatus.
Okay. Someone pull this. Yes.
Mr. Waltz, did you pull this?
Questions?
I thought I pulled the 681 and 682.
Oh, okay. All right. So
Mr. Moran.
I'm sorry, 680 is not an emergency ordinance, so it passes to second reading. Thanks. 681. He didn't have to say a word. Accepting money is usually not hard. 681, please.
Authorize application to the Department of Homeland Security through its Federal Emergency Management Agency for a grant totaling $3,500,000 for the purchase of a Type 3 rapid response fireboat.
Did you pull this one, Joe? Did you want to test that? Okay. Come on up.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. We don't object to anything that the fire department would ask for. That's not our objection. Our objection is that it seems that we have people writing grants to FEMA, which is a complicated process. And what we're suggesting is we don't see a lot of grants for the homeless people, the houseless people. There are grants available, but we don't see them because nobody's writing them. So if you can get $3.5 million from FEMA, which is bizarre to me that FEMA is giving that kind of money around, FEMA should be concerned with the homeless and the houseless. Just like after an earthquake, you have all these people that are homeless. And FEMA comes in and helps them and helps the city to get back on their feet. Well, why don't we have somebody writing grants that have something to do with the homeless or houseless here in Portland Because apparently they're very good. You got $3.5 million. That's a lot of money, to me, anyway. So that's our objection, and kind of indirectly. We love the fire department. I had a great uncle that was a firefighter in New York. So I personally love the fire department.
Can we yield for a second?
Yes.
But I appreciate the comment you're making, and it's important because sometimes we don't tell our story as effectively as we could. So the city has been enormously successful in grant writing to address homeless issues, and you know that because you're a regular visitor okay. here. And we got money for...
Would you yield now?
But could I put in the record what we've done?
Sure.
We've gotten over $1 million for housing with people with AIDS, HIV/AIDS, and that money goes with a nonprofit partner. We have done exceptionally well getting grant money to remove lead paint from the homes of low-income families that where children are at risk. We have been borrowing against future CDBG funds, as you know, to preserve homes for older adults downtown. We've spent over $200 million the last 4 years of local taxpayer money addressing homelessness in urban renewal districts. The list goes on and on. If your challenge is we're doing, there's more we can do, we accept that challenge every day. But to say somehow that the city has been negligent in seeking grant money is not a fair, accurate, or a fair, or as you know, accurate representation of our efforts around homelessness.
Okay, would you yield? My concern is you have almost 2,000 people living on the street. So when you say you've done all these wonderful things and you spent all of this money, why do we have these many people still on the street? It's a complicated issue. I'll grant you that. However, until we have the capacity to house every person, every human being that is in trouble and at 2 o'clock in the morning needs a place to stay, then we shouldn't brag. We shouldn't say, well, we spent $1 million here, and we spent $1 million, and we spent $400 million building these temples.
You yield, Joe?
Have you ever considered sitting down with the homeless and saying, what is it that you need? No, you go to professionals, and they build you buildings that cost $40 million, and it sounds great. But I'm saying to you, if you really want to get behind this stuff, then ask the people that are affected. If I want to know about firefighting, I would go to that firefighter and say, what happens in this type of fire? Why do I do that? Because he's the expert. A homeless or a houseless person is affected by what's happening. They're the experts. And you never invited them into your councils to talk and listen to what they're saying. Because you keep building buildings. And you can say, oh, there's Commissioner Fisher's building.
Okay, Joe. Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else want to testify on this item? Come on up. Morning.
Morning. My name is Lightning. A couple issues I have on this this grant is, it's my understanding that in 2010, there was the public safety bond. And now it's my understanding some of that money is currently being used to build two boats currently that are the Type 2 rapid response. And then in 2011, they did a survey on the Columbia River scoping project report that states maybe they need another one. My only concern here is that when you have two boats already being built, how do you do an effective study without actually having those boats in operation to know if they're really needed and there's not an oversupply of boats? And so that's kind of where my concern is on that third boat, that the money is being basically given from the grant. Is it going to be an oversupply of what we really need? And another concern that I do have is that I understand there could be some potential layoffs in the fire department sometime in October. Can you not obtain money for basically labor from the grant? So would it not be more wise to earmark that for the labor first instead of putting a third boat out there, which could create oversupply and not have enough people to operate it? So that's a concern I have. Now, Also pertaining just to on the housing issue, if I can go in that direction for a few seconds, my biggest concern is just who's currently out on the sidewalks. We kind of have a floating number there, say 1,800 to 2,800. And I think there definitely has to be more money provided for future development projects or future housing. And I don't hear a lot about that. I know that there's possibly in San Francisco, they're doing a 1,400-unit public housing, if I'm correct on that. And basically, we don't hear of any big numbers in the Portland, Oregon market of any development projects. And I hope to hear some of those numbers in the future on actually providing housing, because I think housing is the solution. And again, these programs are effective, but again, housing is the solution, and I don't hear of a lot of big projects online. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay. Actually, it might be good to get Fire Bureau staff to come up after you.
Okay.
Thanks. Because you raised a good point, which is, are we buying fireboats with the bond measure? I know, as I recall, we were buying a fireboat house, but refresh my memory at least about what we're purchasing with the bond measure, and will we be oversupplied with boats if we do succeed in getting this federal money for another one?
Okay. My name is Marco Benetti. I'm Deputy Chief of Logistics, Portland Fire and Rescue. The Columbia River Scoping Project was conducted a couple years ago and completed about 18 months ago. It was authorized by the Port Security Grant. Coast Guard solicited that scoping project to be conducted. And I'll get to your pointed question here in a second. I just want to answer Mr. Lightning's question about that project. It was a pretty extensive evaluation of the Columbia and Willamette River system, all the way from the Astoria, mouth of the Columbia River, up to Lewiston, Idaho, and including the navigable waterways up to Willamette Falls. That independent study was the one identified what resources, law enforcement as well as fire resources, were available on or unavailable on the Columbia and Willamette River systems. They identified that Portland Fire and Rescue was the only fireboat in the area, in that entire region on the Columbia, that could service the Columbia River. So that's where that information came from as far as who said we need a boat on the Columbia River. Vancouver Fire and Rescue and Columbia River Fire and Rescue, which is next door and north of basically Clark County, they are also looking at acquiring a fireboat because they were identified as a need. Astoria needs a fireboat. Upriver is a little more difficult because of the shallower channels and things and the spread out no man's lands where there's no jurisdictions between areas is a little more challenging. But law enforcement also is lacking in those areas. But the one thing that is pointed in this, it was identified in the ordinance as the scoping project pointing out we need another Type 3 fast response fireboat. That's kind of why we included that in the ordinance. The grant funds specifically, this is merely a request. There's no guarantee that we'll even be successful in acquiring this grant. There's also a kind of a caveat in there that says there's a 25% matching funds requirement by the federal government, and there's a waiver process that we're going to include with the grant request. And if they do not grant the waiver, then we wouldn't be able to go forward with receiving the grant. So, and that's pretty significant, 25% of $3.5 million. So, as far as the GEO bond funds are concerned, yes, the bond funds were approved by the voters to acquire multiple different aging apparatus in Portland Fire and Rescue's fleet. Currently, with the budget cuts and the different configuration that we have in Portland Fire and Rescue now, we're reevaluating what that list of apparatus is going to be. But essentially, our fleet is aging. The funds over the last decade or so have been kind of used for other requirements, and some of the apparatus replacement funds were deferred. So that caused our apparatus fleet to start to get older. They get older, the maintenance costs go up, the wear and tear goes up, and over time, those costs start to eat away at the budget, which is basically a waste in the long end. So the GEO bond is going to allow for the current list, and this isn't exhaustive, but it includes 11 fire engines, some wildland firefighting brush units, some support apparatus like air units, and rehab rigs, which are what we respond to fires with to support our firefighters after they've fought fires, and you know, with hydration and food. And
Chief, can I jump in for a sec?
Yes.
This is enormously helpful, but actually, it's not responsive. Can I jump
sure,
in?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes.
You're doing a beautiful job, but it's not. We're not having a hearing on the GEO bond. So can you?
Okay.
Let's just focus on the question at hand. How many vehicles are we going to have on the water when at an optimal configuration? How many boats do we have in our system?
We will have three fireboats. We have three fireboats currently.
Campbell
Williams. Is in reserve.
What are the other two?
Have the Vernon Bus, which is in Hayden Island currently.
And the other?
George Williams is at Station 6 on Front Avenue.
So we have three. Does this application before council allow us to seek federal funds to buy a fourth or to replace one of our existing vessels?
To buy a fourth, yes, sir.
Okay. And is that part of your strategic plan to have as many as four vessels?
The strategic plan, I can't speak to that directly.
Is it part of the Fire Bureau's plan to have four vessels?
The plan is to have three active in-service vessels. The fireboat Campbell is going to be in basically a museum piece in the long run.
This replaces the Campbell?
It'll actually replace the fireboat Bus, but it could replace the Campbell. Okay. That's the chief's decision, what she decides to do.
And does the action before us affect any of the staffing decisions that council has to make? In other words, does adding, if we are successful in this grant application, does it have any implications in terms of staffing and budget?
No, because the current staff would still operate the vessels at hand.
Thank you.
Okay, and so is this boat essentially similar to the one in Hayden Bay?
Actually, well, yes. I mean, it hasn't been spec'd out yet. We don't have the money to purchase it. But if we're successful, then it would be probably similar to the two that are being constructed right now.
Okay. All right.
And that would replace the one on Hayden Island, which is approaching over 20 years old, and by the time...
So, Chief, if we were not successful in getting this grant, would this be paid for by either general fund, GEO bond, or some other source?
I can't answer that because it may not even be put into play.
So we are asking for federal funds because that's the way we can pay for this. If we're unsuccessful, we may not, in fact, seek the additional vessel. Is that correct?
That's correct, as I understand it.
Okay.
Thank
All
you.
Right, that helps. Appreciate that.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Thanks. Okay, anyone else wants to testify on this? Come on up.
Again, my name is Mike Morin, and I'm a resident of Portland. With regard to these three, first of all, I want to say, with respect to what Commissioner Salzman said about the spending on housing issues.
Commissioner Fish, but yes, go ahead.
No, it was Commissioner Salzman, actually. Yes, it was. You said, because I remember you talking about lead paint removal and children.
Okay, well, go ahead.
But anyway, the thing was, at first blush, it sounded like those were all good uses of money. You know, I just heard it, and my first reaction was, you know, not be able to look and think about it really. But I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
That those are good uses of money at first blush. With regards to these three now, firefighters, of course, you know, the first one, 680, like any OSHA type thing, you know, it's a good idea to give, you know, safety and equipment to people who really need them. The thing I've noticed in my 12 years in Oregon is that with all the rain, y'all don't have very many fires. So it's sort of like what if there was a riot and what would happen in the emergency rooms, or like what if Mount Hood blew this way, you know, and blew out this way? I don't know what's on the other side of Mount Hood, but if it blew in towards the city, like, wow. You know, it's like planning like a healthcare budget and what about emergency situations. So $518,000 might not seem like a lot of money, but it is a lot of money. $3.5 million for, again, with the fireboats, you know, I don't know that much about it, but the same arguments apply. Is like, is like, it's like buying an SUV, a large SUV, because you're going to help your kid move every two or three years, you know, and then driving the SUV around all the time, you know, a big SUV, you know, allegorically speaking. So what I want to say is that in the $4.5 million and a management information system for homeless, you know, sometimes you got to really be down there and be homeless yourself and be down there talking with homeless people and discussing the situation. Sometimes I think, you know, no offense, I don't mean offense to y'all, but sometimes I think that you're really not really in touch with what it's like to be down in the bottom and all the intricacies, and there's a lot of good people, you know. I just want to say $4.5 million is a lot of money, and what we could do with respect to the crisis and long-term community betterment aspects. Now I've been trying to get in touch with REACH, you know, and I haven't gotten a response back from them yet.
Okay, well, maybe we can help there. Oh. Well, thank you for coming this morning. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. You want to testify on this? Come on up. Bye.
Yes, my name is Lightning. Again, speaking on the Type 3 rapid response fire boats, maybe I'm not very clear here myself, and I apologize for that. But I'll read number 3 on this ordinance, which states, using funds from the 2010 Public Safety General Obligation Bond, PFNR is having 2 Type 3 rapid response fire boats built, which will be located at, now my understanding by that terminology, they're currently being built and they'll be located. Now that's 2 off the bonds. Then we revert to the need for a third Type 3 rapid response is the grant. So that's 3 boats that are going to be on the market, if I'm correct. So if I'm wrong, I do apologize, but the way I read this, from the bond, they're currently building 2. From the grant, it's a proposed 3rd. That will put 3 boats out on the water. Now, again, is that going to create oversupply? That's my point I'm making.
Let's ask again. I appreciate
okay,
that.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate that clarification.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because I don't think we asked you directly, Chief, and that is, are we purchasing additional fire boats with bond funds?
And the answer to that is we're not purchasing additional fire boats. We're purchasing a replacement.
But it says we're having 2.
There is one additional boat that has been authorized to be purchased for the downtown core area. That's
right,
station,
well, now,
that's
now
station
I'm getting,
21.
Now I'm getting lost. We have the Campbell, which has been around since 1929.
Correct.
Right. We have the Williams, which has been around since 1980-something.
Correct.
And then we have the boat on Hayden Island. I don't remember the name of it.
The bus.
The bus?
Vernon Bus.
Bus. I'm sorry, the USSE. Those are the 3 we have today.
Correct. And we have the David Campbell.
Right, yeah, Campbell, the Williams, and the bus. Okay,
correct.
And so we're building 3. We're building 2 more.
Correct.
Now, without the grant.
Yes, sir.
And then if we get the grant, we'll build an additional one.
Correct.
So that would be 6 boats.
That would be 5 boats.
Campbell, Williams, bus, and...
then with the 3rd, yes, the grant boat would be a 6 boat.
Right.
But one of the grant, Geobond boats is replacing the Williams, and that will be sold or donated. The second grant boat is being built to essentially replace the Campbell, which is going to be housed at Station 21 in downtown Portland.
Out of service?
Out of service. It'll be technically in emergency reserve service because the pumps and everything will still be able. But it was built in 1927, so it's very maintenance intensive and. You know, they use it for ceremonial things, water displays, stuff like that. But
well, frankly, I think Lightning's point is sound, which is we will be richly supplied with boats if we succeed in getting this grant. That doesn't mean you have to operate them all, and doesn't mean that it wouldn't make sense to keep older boats in reserve and use the newer ones. I get that. But just like we do with rolling stock in the Fire Bureau,
Correct.
We have some old engines and trucks, and we keep some of them in reserve. So I'm not going to pass judgment on whether 6 is too many to have in the fleet or not. But I think his point was correct, which is that we're going to be, richly supplied with Mayor, vessels.
I'm also trying to follow the math, but it sounds like of the six, the Campbell, which is a very expensive boat to operate,
yes,
is being decommissioned, and it will be used mostly for ceremonial events like the red, white, and blue water.
City display. Treasure, yes, sir.
Yeah, so it's a great old boat.
And it sounds like another vessel is being decommissioned and sold and replaced. So is my math correct that if we're successful with this grant, we will end up having four vessels?
In operation?
Yes, sir.
And there will be four operational vessels, but then you will decide at any one time how many are in service.
At any one time, it's intent. The intent by the chief's office is to have three in service.
Three in service. And
one in reserve.
One in reserve.
One goes down for maintenance or is damaged for repairs, they need to have one that they can
call
back.
But, Chief, you've also said, and I think the key question for us isn't so much, will the federal government pay for a replacement boat? It's, does it have a budgetary impact to put it in service? And you've said no. You've said this is already budgeted, that the three vessels and the operation costs are already part of our budget.
For the staff, yes. Currently, the staff at Station 21 is a crew that rides fire engine, and if there's a boat call, they would jump on the boat and do that. They do that at all three stations.
That's important because we often think about the O&M to follow. So if it's already budgeted, what we're talking about is, in effect, replacing our aging fleet with new vessels,
right,
but not taking on new staffing obligations in the process. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you.
As it stands right now.
So,
it's a good discussion. I'm actually glad whoever pulled it, I'm pleased we did.
So, thanks.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for any confusion with my rambling. I sometimes...
Oh, no, you did a good job. It said we just needed to... There was a question on the table we needed to get to, and you were very helpful on that.
Absolutely. I think if you have any questions, please...
Okay. I think this has been a helpful discussion. Lightning, I'm not going to let you come back up because I think you raised a good point.
Yeah, he had good questions.
But I think, Commissioner Salzman, this is just one to flag. I think, obviously, we should proceed to apply for the grant. If we can get federal money to purchase capital equipment, that's almost without exception a good idea. But then there's the operational question of how many fireboats do we actually need. The study that the chief referenced is a good resource, and I no doubt that and other things you'll consult to make that decision about the level of effort. I will say, however, particularly as a boat owner, that owning a boat and leaving it in the water costs money regardless of whether you use it or not. So we'll have to determine how many of these boats we want to maintain regardless of whether they're being staffed or not, because a boat is a hole in the water into which you pour money, and in this case, public money. So that'll be something else for the commissioner in charge and for the Bureau to figure out how many of these we want to keep in reserve, even as museum pieces, as wonderful as they are, it still costs money. So.
Correct. Yeah, and that's above my category to make a decision on right now.
I understand. You do a good job of managing the assets. We have to figure out how many of them we can afford. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
All right. Further council discussion? Anyone else that wants to testify? Then let's take a roll call on that item, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then anyone else that wants to testify on 682? If not, then we'll take a roll call on that. Oops, sorry. Sorry. Go ahead.
That was 682.
Come on up, both of you.
Sorry.
With all due respect, you know, we come in here and we raise issues with y'all about what's going on.
Right.
And we just took up one of those issues. And I know, and it seems to me, maybe I'm misunderstanding what's going on here, but I had some dealings. I used to go to city council meetings in Eugene. And it seems like no matter how good a testimony the people give, that you all, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, that you all seem just like a rubber stamp.
Well, the reason it seems that way is these items are on what's called the consent calendar, and it's for routine business like purchases and grant applications. When there's a major community issue or even reasonable amount of controversy, it's on the regular calendar and lots of people sign up. So it's actually fairly unusual for anyone to testify on consent calendar items because they're mostly the routine business of buying things and selling property and, you know, the stuff that the city does on a routine basis. Doesn't mean that there's not an occasional issue. Lightning did a good job of raising one here. We discussed it. We have a better picture of what we're doing. But that's why we call it the consent calendar, is that those are usually items that don't have a lot of public interest. You had some interest. You have a right to come here.
But you're dazzling me with procedural law.
They
Yeah.
It's like you cross a wall, Henley, and you cross okay. the Godfather right. with a lawyer. You get an off connection. Off
we appreciate you coming in your comments, but we're going to let Mr. Walsh testify.
Mayor, before we move on, item 681 was a non-emergency, so we should not have taken a vote on
that. That passes to second reading. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't notice that I'd circled it and didn't see that I didn't have an asterisk under my circle. Okay, now we're back to item 682. We'll let Mr. Walsh testify.
682.
Me too.
Author accept two grants totaling $552,018 from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for administration of the Regional Homeless Management Information System and OTIS Supportive Housing Programs.
Okay.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I have to admit up front, I'm new to this item. It was just pointed out to me this morning, and I haven't done a lot of research on it. But there's a section in this that really bothers me. You're taking the $552,000, and you're going to spend it all on management. That's the way I read it.
This was we're actually accepting a grant that we already applied for. So the terms are set. The deal's the deal.
But I'm suggesting to you that this has almost nothing to do with homeless if management's going to eat up all the money.
No, Joe, you're misreading it. We are, as a condition of receiving federal funds, we must report in excruciating detail information about where the money's dispersed, who is being served, and the like. It's a federal requirement. This is one of the few instances where the federal government actually does not call it an unfunded mandate. They require regular reporting, but they also have a grant program to cover the cost. The management that you are reading here is a management information system. It has nothing to do with management per se. Management information is the information we are as a city required to compile and report to HUD as a condition of receiving federal funds to address homelessness.
Okay, I understand that it's a federal grant. I understand that part.
With management.
And but
it is managing information. That is the term that they're using. Right, it's not management.
Let me give you an example, and you can answer my question, and then I'll go away for a little bit. You have 500,000.
If you went away, we would miss you. So don't go away for too long.
You have $500,000 that you're getting as a grant. What are you going to do with that money?
Exactly what we said in the grant application that they approved, because that's the
that's no good part. Because I don't know what you wrote.
It pays for staffing.
Is it for staffing? Is it for administration? Is it going to be eaten out by the bureaucracy? That's the question.
It's going to compile the information, as Commissioner Fish said, that the federal government requires us to provide them on all kinds of for all kinds of reasons in administering housing
programs.
We have
dedicated staff. We have computer technology.
All right, so your answer is it's going to be eaten up and homeless people are not going to get any benefits out of it at all.
Yes, they are.
What are they?
Part of the money goes for supportive housing programs, too.
And as to Mr. Walsh, Commissioner Fish just said that we have to have these programs as a condition of receiving other federal funds for homelessness.
That's not true.
You were here a few minutes ago
saying... That's not true. That's not true.
Yes, it is.
Because you decided to do these grants. You put the application in on these grants.
And the federal government...
You made the decision. Somebody on this council said,
Joe,
let's go for this one.
Joe, there's a simple
and
answer.
Then it comes back and say, well, we can't do anything because the feds are telling us what to do. That's unfair.
Would you yield for a second?
Of course.
We appreciate your passion, but on this one, just let me sprinkle some reason into this discussion. We are required to report this information. If we did not secure a federal grant to offset the cost, we would be taking the money out of programs that otherwise go into direct services.
You're talking in generalities. When you say you're required to say to the federal government, this is what we did with the money, my question is, okay, what are you going to do with the money? And what you're telling me, it's going into administration. And that bothers me. To no end.
Then
buildings that cost a lot of money bother me, and administration costs a lot of money bothers me, and the homeless sit on the street.
Joe, my recommendation would be if you don't like federal requirements, talk to your congressman.
No, you applied for the grant.
We apply under the terms that they set. We don't get to set the federal government's terms for what grants
But you decided to apply for the grant. There are several grants. There are A, B, C.
Right, Joe,
B says, no, this is restricted to management only, and you chose B. It's your problem.
But, Joe... The federal government is telling us you need to collect this type of information as a precondition to your applying for other federal money to provide direct services. So if we want to keep on applying for money for direct services, which you just told us what you're doing more of a few minutes ago, we have to have this kind of information system. Fortunately, the federal government is telling us they will give us the money for the information system.
Yeah. Why would we not take
that
it?
That makes sense.
That's
I
what
still
we're
don't
doing.
Like it, but it makes sense.
Well, that's what we're doing. So
we all ratify.